Earlier this month, leaders of historically black colleges and universities met at the White House with President Trump, where he pledged his support for their institutions through an executive order. The questions arise, what is the president willing to do and what needs to be done for these colleges and universities? Joining me in studio is a man who was there in the Oval Office, Dr. Dwan Warmack, president at Harris Stowe State University. Welcome home.
Hi, Don.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you as
well. What was the takeaway from this short meeting in the Oval Office?
Right. Actually, it, and you know, we had a series of meetings. It was sort of a three-day event there, and we met with multiple departments. We met with the Department of Defense. We met with the Ag Department. We met with the Department of Ed. And so we had a variety of HUD, you know, so multiple leadership from those different areas. And we had a chance to meet with the Vice President, Secretary of Education, and President Trump. Part of the meeting was, you know, historically this formed by, under President Reagan's administration, the historic White House initiative on HBCUs. Yeah. And but for the past, you know, 16 years, it has been under the Department of Education. And so the new executive order now moves it under the directly back to the White House. And so we feel that that'll give us a little leverage in regards to getting closer to funding.
Is that a good thing for you? I mean, that
we think so. Yeah. We think that's a good first step.
Well, I ask that in part because the new Secretary of Education has been somewhat controversial, mm-hmm. particularly with regard to this meeting and historically black colleges and universities.
Right. But I think our bigger piece is that I am, as any administrator understand, is that if you're not at the table, then you're on a menu.
Yeah.
And so other folks are making decisions for you. And so for us to be at the table where in the White House, it has a stronger voice. But if you have to report through three different layers, sometimes your message can get lost. Mm. And so whether whoever's, it's not a knock on who's the Secretary of Education or anything like that, but it's a focus on the mission and the importance of ensuring over 300,000 African-American students have that chance. Mm.
What did you think of her comment with regard to historically black universities being pioneers in school choice? It was very controversial and called insensitive.
Right. And I probably missed that statement. Yeah. I know during my conversation with her early, she sort of framed a context of it was about school choice and historically black colleges working with charter schools and have for a long time have allowed charter schools to be a part of that. And she framed that as school choice. So I'm not sure with that. You know, I once again, I didn't spend a lot of time on that piece. I am once again committed to ensuring that the large percentage of underrepresented students from historically black colleges and universities have a voice and get funding that's needed.
What is needed? I mean, clearly there is a significant need, not only in historically black colleges and universities, but institutions of higher learning all over the country. What specifically are your needs?
Well, I think about, you know, so on a local level for us, you know, we recruit students from about 80% are first generation college students. And about 78% are Pell eligible. So when you think about that piece of it, those students, the affordability factor is important. If they don't have a chance, you think about the tax base here, you talk about crime in St. Louis. Imagine if they had an education. What would change the demographics here? Imagine the tax base. Imagine the workforce. So, but without funding, you can't provide scholarships. You can't provide opportunities for those students. So scholarships is one for us. You think about infrastructure. You know, we have a growth. We're up 24% in our enrollment, but we're at a place where we are sort of busting out the seams in a lot of places. So our labs are not up to par. So if we have funding, we can fund our labs to be able to do that. If I want to recruit best faculty, to be able to do that as well.
Did you come away from the meeting confident that this might happen? I mean, this is a time, obviously, of some austerity within government and shifting resources and that sort of thing. Are you optimistic that that you'll be getting what you need?
Well, I think it's a good start. You know, yeah. I think, you know, the conversation started there. Now it's continuing for the hard work to happen. You know, it has to – a lot of this happens through the legislator, you know, on, you know, the House and the Senate side. So how do we continue to cultivate relationships with our leaders from Missouri to ensure our voice is heard? So most of these institutions go back to their elected officials to make sure that their support and their voice is heard in Washington, D.C.
We have to point out that through this executive order that was signed by the president, there was no commitment of funds. It was simply a shifting of location, if you will, for where the direction is going to come from.
And in my limited time of reviewing most executive orders, there hasn't really been commitments to funds because that comes from the legislator, right? You know, and so I think, you know, it's for us now to shift the agenda. So if you looked at the executive order, there's a committee and a task force that's formed. And so that committee and task force will set the agenda because we're asking for $25 billion. We think for 50 years of underfunding, these institutions deserve about $25 billion.
That is a lot of loose change, as they say.
A lot is relative if you compare the budget that goes in the United States of America.
Explain what the role of your institution is in this community. I think when you talk about money of that magnitude, people really ought to know how it's being used and what the benefits of spending it are.
Right. Once again, it's not $25 billion to Harris.
I know.
But I would love it. I would love it, right? You know, but I will say is this, that, you know, there's about 500 – there's about 2.3 million residents in the greater St. Louis region, right? There's about 577,000 African-American. About 370,000 are 18 or over. But what is depressing is that 85% of that population do not have a bachelor's degree. And 95% do not have a master's degree. And so we have multiple institutions here, but there's still a subcommunity that's missing. So if that opportunity to educate that population here, what that would do for the workforce, what that would do for everything, the tax base in these areas. So that's our mission, is to provide access and opportunities for underrepresented, underserved population. We are, like I said, where our enrollment is up 24%, largest in the state of Missouri. We are increased our degree programs by 108%. Had a phenomenal meeting with the governor a couple of days ago to talk about the importance of higher education as a whole and the focus on Harris-Stowe State University and the city of St. Louis and the greater St. Louis region. So I'm optimistic leaving that meeting as well.
Was he in a position to make any kind of commitments to you?
I'm clear about the legislative process and how that works. I'll spend enough time in Jeff City and on the Capitol to understand where the decisions are made, you know. But once again, he did make the commitment to higher education. And so for me is that it very similar as President Trump said, he's committed to historically black colleges and universities. I believe you until you show me something different. And so I am optimistic that we can do work together to ensure that the students, over 300,000 students, these institutions have the opportunity to go and get a quality education.
What have you had to give up at Harris-Stowe in the midst of this financial situation?
Well, we're being strategic right now. I think we're fortunate because of our 3 years of enrollment increase. You know, we've been very intentional about building on that. So now we're taking a critical look at everything. Because of $1 million shortfall, that may mean a reduction in workforce. It may mean raising tuition. We're exploring everything because $1 million, state of Missouri allocates about $776 million to higher education. And Harris-Stowe only gets 1% of that. And which is $10 million. And so when you think about 10%, that's, once again, you talk about measly change, right? And so we're grateful, right? But at the end of the day, you're talking about salary, fringe benefits, everything that comes behind that. So we have to, and then you lose $1 million of that, then you have to really look at your workforce.
How did higher education in general get into this hole?
I don't think it was a hole. I think the governor had to, you know, as any administrator that's managing a complex budget, have to balance the budget.
And I think nationally as well.
Exactly. And so I just speaking here for the state, you know, and you had to balance the budget, and higher education was just one of the areas that happened to be cut, you know. And so we want to continue to advocate to show the importance of it and our value proposition of why what we bring to this great state of Missouri and this wonderful city of St. Louis.
Yeah. Just as an aside here, what is it like to find yourself in the Oval Office, probably one of the most important pieces of real estate in the world? Have you been there before?
I hadn't. And that's, you know, for me, was the most transformational experience. I am a kid from the urban core of Detroit, Michigan, first generation to a single mother who had a GED and the first one in my family to graduate, not just from college, but to have a PhD. And to have the opportunity to be in the White House in the Oval Office was transformational, and it gives hope. So I'm able to go back and tell every one of the kids in Jennings, St. Louis Public Schools, Riverview Gardens, this can be you as well. So how do we end up connecting back to the community and giving hope to these kids who sometimes are hopeless?
Uh-huh. Yeah, some people criticize that meeting as a photo op.
Yeah, I think that's for them, right? Yeah. I think it's less about the photo. For me, was more about ensuring that if I'm not at the table, then I'm on the menu.
Yeah.
And so if I'm able to be able to have a conversation about what's important to our institution, what supports my students, who knows better than me? And so to have that conversation. So that conversation, the photos came after 30 minutes of conversation. And so, once again, to be able to walk away and have conversations with the Department of Ed, Ag, all of those different areas who fund us. I mean, prime example, Harris Stowe is just a recipient of the Lewis Stokes $5 million grant from National Science Foundation, largest grant in school history, and it's based on relationships. And we're the lead institution with WashU, St. Louis University, Truman, and other institutions. So relationships matter.
We've got to take a quick break. We'll do that now, but I'll invite the audience. If you have questions, give us a call at 382-8255. It's 382-TALK. We're talking with Dr. Dwan Warmack of Harris Stowe State University. We'll be back in a moment or two. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to the conversation with Dr. Dwan Warmack, president of Harris Stowe State University. You stayed on in Washington after the meeting with the government officials, didn't you? What was going on the day after?
Well, I think the day after we had a chance to meet with different legislators. And mm-hmm. So they had a meeting with individuals. It's called HBCU fly-in. And so there was different members from the House and members from the Senate who came in and talked about the future of historically black colleges. How do we work together with this legislator? And it was an all-day event. And so we had a chance to build relationships, have conversations, and talk about what are our mutual interests.
And the dialogue continues. You mentioned off the air that you're meeting today with archdiocesan representatives to have them send more students to Harris Stowe.
Yes, indeed. I truly know the value proposition of Harris Stowe, the most affordable tuition structure in the state of Missouri. When you're talking about $199 per credit, students can come there, $5,800, take 32 credit hours. I mean, once again, it's the best deal in town.
Let's take some calls. We have a number of people who want to talk with you, Dr. Warmack, so let's get the process going. We'll start with John, who is calling from St. Louis. John, go ahead. You're on the air. John, are you with us? John? Okay. See if we can get him back in a moment or two. Let's go to Ed. He's calling from Wentzville. Ed, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
Harris Stowe is very important to St. Louis and the state. And I'm suggesting that it is no longer a traditional black school. The city school district had two junior and teachers' colleges, one for whites, which was Harris, and one for blacks, which was Stowe. When appropriately they were merged to end the awfulness of segregation, Harris Stowe then ceased to be either white or black and gave up its historic connection. For the current school to be considered black can be a return to some degree to the awfulness of segregation. Harris alums have even held reunions. Or I know those who, friends of mine who went to Harris, many of them professors in universities, do hold reunions. Lincoln and Jefferson City is a little bit different because it wasn't a merger, so it continues as a historic school, even though it does have a lot of white students and faculty.
Okay, thanks for the call. Do you want to respond to that? He says it wonders why that could encourage segregation?
Right. I think thank you for that question. And I think we continue to be one of the most diverse institutions in the state of Missouri. Our history is very rich. You're exactly right. We were founded in 1857, so we'll celebrate 160 years of educating the greater St. Louis community this year. And, you know, Harris was founded for whites only in 1857, and Stowe in 1894 for African Americans only. The two institutions merged, landmark case Brown versus Board of Education in 1954. And so we continue to remain one of the most diverse. You know, when you think about 80% of our students are African American, 20% are non-African American. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about any other institution, when you think about that, doesn't have that type of diversity. And we are welcoming to all students. It's open to all students. And our faculty and staff reflect the diversity that's there as well.
You know, his question kind of takes me back to the comments from the Education Secretary, Betsy DeVos, mm-hmm. who said that these colleges that we're talking about, the historically black colleges and universities, are pioneers in the area of choice. But what she missed and what people criticized her for, and this is an important part of your history, is the fact that in the days that school was founded, there wasn't any choice.
Right.
If there was, it was extremely limited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's an important part of the history to recollect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Harris Stowe is different in that way, is that he is clearly articulated. We're different from Lincoln. So we celebrate 100 years, 160 years of existence, but we only celebrate 30 years of being designated by the federal government as historically black college or university. You know, that's just a designation that is not exclusive. That is not, we welcome all students to come get a transformational education at our institution.
And what is the number of students you're carrying right now?
Total enrollment?
Yeah.
We're hovering around 1,500 students right now.
Okay. Yeah. Back to the phones. Let's bring in Scott. He's calling from Chesterfield. Scott, go ahead.
Yeah. Trump has said some nice things about helping black people. Like, I think in his State of the Union address, he kind of implied that, you know, he wants to help the inner cities like Chicago, Detroit, Baltimore, you know. And I kind of wish he would focus on that instead of the negative things he's focusing on right now, you know. And maybe he will, you know, because, I mean, he does need Democrats to pass his infrastructure thing. So, you know, maybe he'll come around. I don't know.
All right, Scott, is that a question or a comment?
Well, I guess it was more of a comment, you know, and he could, you know, respond to it, you know, if he likes, you know.
Thank you for the call. Thank you for the call. Go ahead.
Well, Scott, I'd say thank you for the comment question. I mean, I think it was a great first step with President Trump to bring the historically black college and universities presidents to the White House and to show the commitment to the importance of education here in the United States of America.
Hmm. You certainly don't want to be critical of the Trump or the administration at a point like this when it's so necessary and important to work with them.
Right. And I mean, at this point, I mean, when you think about having an opportunity to have these conversations on an early in administration, first 45 days, you know, I think, you know, I'm focusing on going forward, you know. So whoever was in office, if it was Hillary Clinton, I'll have the exact same conversations about the importance of the mission of our students that we serve at our institutions.
Do you think your colleagues who were at the meeting left it feeling the same way that you do?
I think the critical mass did. I would say the critical mass, because we've had numerous follow-up conversations. I think it's, once again, I remain optimistic. You know, I am a glass half full person than a glass half empty. I believe in the mission of this institution. This is a ministry for me. And so this is the work that I am called to do. And so I believe in advocating and fighting and supporting to ensure these students are successful.
What were the conversations like with the other officials that you met with? You met with the vice president, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you said the Department of Defense, mm-hmm. as well. What were they all about, and how do they work?
Well, I think part of the vice president was very engaging, you know, talked about, you know, the president's commitment to the work that happens at historically black colleges and universities, how this administration wanted to support the mission that as we go forward. It was a dialogue. A variety of the presidents had the opportunity to sort of state the case of, you know, what we're looking for. And so I think it ended up being, I can't remember the exact number, maybe 10 presidents presented, you know, different areas of why, you know, these institutions are important, what we're looking for. And he had folks taking notes to take back. So I think that was a very beneficial conversation. The other areas was more of just for us to have conversations about where the funding sources come from. How can we tie in and collaborate? How do we create internships for our students? How do we get our students employed? How do we solicit funding from those areas for our students as well? So it was, I think we walked away as, once again, a good start. And the, now the hard work happens to solidify and allocate the funding.
What kind of support were the colleges and universities getting from the Obama administration?
Well, I think I think President Obama during his administration, you know, supported HBCUs to the best of his ability and funded to the best that he possibly could. So our goal is to continue to grow and, you know, seek more and better support.
Let's take another call. We'll bring in Sean calling from St. Louis City. And Sean, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I know, Professor. I hear your reasoning behind the productivity from the meeting with President Trump, but I'm just not hearing anything that's concrete, that's any different or any more than what I've last President Obama had done. So I'm just trying to figure out why are you so optimistic just about a meeting with him. I'm not hearing anything in his behavior or his conversation or anything saying that he even values black people. So I'm just wondering, just because you had a meeting with him and he had people take notes and then nothing has come from that since then, why are you still optimistic? I went to HBCU as well, and I went to Harris Stowe for a couple classes. So I do know the value of HBCU, and I understand that they are very important for our education. So I'm just wondering why so optimistic. And one follow-up, the fact that you, to me, when I heard you speak of DeVos and they asked you about her comment about school choice, to me you downplayed it as if, well, you didn't understand that she was focusing on school choice and that was different and you didn't really agree with the opinion that was ignorant. And to me, that's, I feel like that's sad to even say. For her to make comments like that and to not even understand, and then to be the Secretary of Education, I think we have a problem.
Okay, Sean, I'm going to stop you there because we're running out of time. But do you want to respond to him again?
Sure. Well, thank you, Sean, for your question. Thank you for being an HBCU graduate, and thank you for attending Harris Stowe. We will make sure we get your alumni card in the mail. Hopefully you can support us there as well. I think that's a big piece. Alums, when you go to institution, the support back later. But the second piece to your question, regarding optimistic, I don't matter who's in office, I'm optimistic. As a first generation college student myself, coming from a lower socioeconomic background, you know, I have a responsibility to fight and advocate for the students at my institution. And if I'm not fighting for them, who else will? So if I'm not at the table to have conversations, so the jury's still out. So when, you know, we've been less than 2 weeks, you know, things have to go through the House, have to go through the Senate. The budget has to be passed. The budget has to be created. We're early. Once that process happened, nothing happens, then that's when the conversation happens. So now individuals have promised this support, and then if the support doesn't happen, we can say, hey, you didn't do it. But I think giving anyone a chance to do that, I am an advocate. I'm a strong believer in HBCUs. I believe in our mission, and I'm responsible for supporting the students that are there.
Got to stop you right there, Dr. Dwan Warmack. Thank you so much for being with us at Harris Stowe State University. Pleasure to talk with you again. That's it for us for today. We're back tomorrow. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.